two young fathers are shot to death outside an iconic Utah restaurant.
I said, your dad has been hurt really bad.
The grief was disorienting for those left behind, until one choice changed everything.
I just remember writing this letter, and it wasn't me writing it.
Can a personal decision shape generations?
We're all falling for this guy's trick.
I'm Amy Donaldson. Season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, is available now. Follow us at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey everyone, are you ready to add a sprinkle of joy to your day? Then you need to check out Add to Cart. Hi, I'm Sujan Pak.
And I'm Kulap Vilaysack. We're your hosts, and on this show, we talk about the things we buy, the things we buy into, and what it says about who we are.
That's right. Each week, we're going to have some honest and maybe, you know, a little TMI conversations about all the fabulous, weird, wonderful things we're adding to or ditching from our carts. You know, we talk about beauty products, latest health trends, philosophies we're passionate about. Nothing is off limits on this podcast.
We're diving deep into everything we and our guests buy into and exploring what it reveals about who we truly are. We're going to decide what's worth the investment, be it money or emotions.
Add to Cart from Lemonada Media has new episodes out on Tuesdays, wherever you get your podcasts.
Lemonada.
Okay, actually, can you just pretend that you're listening to a fully complete theme song here? I got really in my head, and I tried to make it perfect, and I couldn't. So this is going to be the theme song right here. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Funny Because It's True. I'm Elise Myers. Today's guest is a name that you should write down because this person is someone you don't want to miss. I'm talking about comedian, writer, and artist Zach Zimmerman. They just came out with their first book, a collection of essays titled, Is It Hot in Here or Am I Suffering for All Eternity for the Sins I Committed on Earth? Like their writing and comedy, Zach is candid, quick, dark, and so sweet. I can't wait for you to hear our conversation. So two things that are funny because they're true. Number one, I know Zach just came out with their first book, but I think that I pitched them a solid second book idea, if I do say so myself. And number two, we learn the power of the pizza coupon. All right, let's get into it. Oh my gosh, Zach, can I just tell you really quick what the last 5 minutes of my life was like before we are going to have this beautiful conversation?
What were you fighting off? I'm so intrigued.
So like literally at 12 o'clock when we were supposed to talk, I hear the loudest lawnmower kind of rev up and I realize these people come and like help us with our lawn. And they started and just like, we're like swinging by. They're like, well, I just have some time. We'll just hit, you know, hit Elise's house. I'm like, amazing. So I go out there and I'm like, I'm so sorry. I need you to stop because I didn't know how else to explain it. So I was like, I just said, I'm on TV because I didn't know how to say like, I have a podcast and I'm just screaming this over his lawnmower.
What a diva. Oh my God.
Yeah. He's like, what?
I'm on TV.
I know. Like, why was that the thing? Okay. So then right before that, I had a quick snack and I was like, because I'm pregnant, all I want is super spicy food. Like Carolina Reapers is what I'm like really wanting. And I ate a piece of cheese that has like Carolina Reapers like woven inside of it. And I didn't wash my hands because then I went to go outside to tell the guy. So then I rubbed my face as they stopped and I started like, they started like burning. So then I had to wash it and like moisture. And so now we're here. And so now, so now we're good.
That belongs on TV. That story, I think.
Yeah.
Oh my God. What a comedy of errors.
There's no lawnmowers. We're just here together. Okay. Anyways, Zach, seriously, thank you so much. I am so excited to talk to you today. Thank you for making the time. And I wanted to start by saying, I have noticed you have some incredible sweaters in your collection. And I want to know what the inspiration behind that is. Is that like a fluke? Are you just like, you happen to have all these sweaters? Are you a sweater person? What's the story?
It's a great, thank you for the compliment. I can't take full credit. I did not make them, but a couple of years ago, my friend David was like, you might like this sweater that he had. And he pointed me on to this designer named Dosefis. It means like two bosses on Instagram. And he takes just like recycled Hanes sweatshirts. They're all like upcycled and is stitching felt onto them to create these like gorgeous like suns and hearts and daisies. And so I bought one and then I bought another. And then when I did, when I went on James Corden's show to do stand up for the first time on TV last year, I was like, oh, wait, I should wear one of these. And then when my book came out, I was like, I wonder if he'd make one inspired by the cover. And so he did. And then I was like, what can I pay you? I feel like I need. And he's like, it's on the house. And so now I have like, I know I have like a best friend designer. He's so, they're all one of a kind. I even just got one. It's a black, well, I'll just describe it. It's all black. And the heart, the flowers are all black too. So there's like these gorgeous flowers. Yeah. Which I think is like a fun, what I like is like my comedy's kind of like a little delight, but also devastating sometimes. And so I like tricking people into like, oh, we got Mr. Rogers up there in these beautiful sweaters. And then I'm like, life is meaningless.
Just kidding.
Yeah.
So now I guess you have, every single time you have a good event and a big event happening in your life, you have to then get
have
a new sweater.
For it.
I think
I know.
This is just kind of the thing forever now. And you'll have like a closet, like a capsule, like wardrobe of just these sweaters. And you'll have a story behind all of them. And maybe one day you can make a book about just the sweaters.
Oh, wait, that's a great idea.
Honestly, one of my favorite things to do is come up with creative ideas for other people and they have to execute them and I can just have the idea. It's like, it's the best part of the creative process. Okay, so for your book, you said that you got a new sweater for your book and I really want to hear about the book and the writing process and how that has been. It's Is It Hot in Here? That's the name of the book, right?
That's the first part. It's so long, but it's funny. It's called Is It Hot in Here or Am I Suffering for All Eternity for the Sins I Committed on Earth? Is the full
okay? Perfect.
You can find
real
it if
light.
You. Yeah, real light.
Real, really light. Can you tell me the inspiration behind the title and then also the rest of the book?
I knew I wanted to invoke hell. I grew up. My dad was a pastor, and I grew up in this very evangelical church. And getting out of that and dealing with that religious trauma is like part of what informs my comedy. So I knew I wanted to invoke hell.
The length of it is amazing. It's like the longer the title is, the more you're like, now I have to explain it. And that's like the best.
Yes. And I feel like it gives people like a gut punch. It's very me. But now I'm like, second book is either going to be one word or long titles. I'm long title guy.
You should like make it the whole cover and then have it like have to wrap around the back. Like,
wait.
That's really funny. Just like a couple
that.
Words though in the back where it's like, you could have just made the type smaller, but you intentionally chose to just wrap it around three words.
It reminds me of the cover of How to Be Perfect by Michael Schur, creator of The Good Place. The T on perfect is like cut off. And so it's so funny and charming. And I shouldn't be plugging it because it just came out as a paperback too. So we're in direct competition with one another. But it's such a fantastic book.
You know what? They can both be super successful.
There we go.
They're both going to be great. Bestsellers. What was it like writing that book? How long did it take you? I'm writing a book right now and it's like, it's so new to me that I just want to know all the things about it.
They say your first book you've been writing your whole life, some version of it. Mm-hmm. And so maybe that's why they're sometimes the best ones or the hardest to write because you're mining like stories you've told at dinner parties or in my case like via stand-up or you're probably like looking to your most viral TikToks like people want to hear the behind the scenes of that or go deeper into these themes and so it can be kind of overwhelming to try to pick it all but just write it all out and you I imagine as a creative you know like getting into a play state is good for generating and then getting into like critical negative state is good for like the editing process. And so you want to hold both parts of your brain, give yourself time to play on the page, have those ideas like, and cut off the voice that's like, that's dumb. People won't be able to read it. That's such a terrible idea, Elise. Why did you think of that?
No, definitely. That makes sense.
Do we have the same? I think everybody has it. Some version of that like negative critical talk track in their brain. Now I'm thinking of, I've listened to a few episodes of how you cut off the talk and then talk about it.
Do you mean like this, right here?
But I'm wondering, I'm wondering if I've said anything so far. I'm afraid you're going to be like, Zach went too far.
Never. If I ever do VO, it's always me like spiraling with me. It's never like this person. It's like, oh my God, Elise, why did you say that?
Why did you say that?
And it's stuff. It's a very interesting medium, being able to correct yourself in real time while listening back to a conversation you've had. It makes me hear myself differently. And it's like, I'm curious with when you write, do you go through a story and you write it out? And then do you read it as somebody else and you're like seeing it differently when you write? Like, what is that process like for you when you're getting your stories down on paper?
You have to take a step away. Mm. The trick is if you can treat your own writing as if you're reading it for the first time and you didn't know what's behind the scenes or what you were thinking. So if you can literally come to it with fresh eyes. So I find I have to like take a break. And sometimes that's a day, sometimes that's a week, sometimes that's a month, and try to treat it as like, oh, I see what you were trying to do there. People have done it before, but it's all hacking your own brain. And if you know your mind, yeah, like, oh, I'm being too hard on myself. The other thing is sometimes like sentences or ideas will just come to you in fully formed. And so then you just have to have a life where you're able to be like, oh my God, I have to write that now. Like I'm clicked into the zeitgeist or the creative force. I used to work in advertising, and the head of voice for Chipotle told me this. It was so funny. It was basically, I think it's like some sort of postmodern thing. We are just vessels for creative ideas. So the idea doesn't come from you. It's not your idea. You're just like a vessel for, oh my God, Elise is writing it down.
No, I was like actually writing it down in my notebook.
And so it's about getting in tune with the zeitgeist. Like ideas are just flowing in the ether. And so it removes the ego from writing about like, I have to be a good writer. I have to make this perfect thing. And this was all being told to me by like a burrito boss.
Ooh, that's another good book title, Burrito Boss. And with that, it is time for a break. When we come back, Zach tells me more about their work life before comedy.
You've likely encountered countless astrology stereotypes or hundreds of astrology memes saturating social media, but have you ever pondered what's beyond the surface? There's a new podcast we want to recommend called Stars and Stars with Issa. In each episode, astrologer Issa Nakazawa sits down with the biggest stars of our time, uncovering surprising insights hidden within their birth charts while shedding light on their life paths and purposes. Hear what the stars and cosmos have to say about guests like W. Kamau Bell, Aja Monet, Gia Tolentino, Umi, and more. You'll laugh, cry, and come away with insights about your own life you never imagined. Listen to Stars and Stars with Issa wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. After season one aired, I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season two of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few, and of course, my 90-year-old mom, Judy. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me Season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
With your experience, how long did you work in a job where you were able to just get advice from somebody that was like the leader of Chipotle? Because how did you get from there to here? What is that?
Oh, my life's taken twists and turns. Yeah, once I graduated college, I like had to have a day job. And so I got into, first worked at an LGBT community center. And then I got into advertising, like text message marketing. And then I kind of lost my way a little, where I was like, oh, if I don't care about this job, let me try to make as much money as possible while doing it. And it did help me have like a little nest egg to take this leap into a creative life over the past like 5 years.
How long did you do that job before you ended up taking that leap?
There, 7 years.
Were you doing stand-up at the same time? You said you were kind of transitioning like that?
Yeah, burning the candle at both ends, just leaving, going to stand-up in the evenings.
What was that like to be in that, like, two totally different worlds at the same time?
Oh, it was very unhealthy, I think.
Really?
Because I wasn't bringing my full self to work at all. I, like, was very by the book. I'm not showing you who I am. I'm not funny at work. I'm a boss. And then I got to be who I was via stand-up. I think other people are more successfully able to like kind of be fuller versions of themselves. My therapist says we're only like 20% of ourselves at work anyway. So to me, it was very like just a job. And it just got, yeah, I just had a reckoning with myself after I moved to New York. I was getting like enough signals from the universe. So like, hey, maybe you should stop doing it. Like,
yeah.
I think just getting older and burning the candle at both ends, you get a little tired.
Yeah. What was a signal like when you were trying to figure out whether to make that leap? Like, can you remember one signal where you're like, that's it. This is my time.
I think when I was like taking a trip to LA for maybe the first or second time, just to do some like 10-minute spots and like reconnect with some old friends. And I got like an email that my first like humor piece was going to be on NewYorker.com. And I was like, it's a goal I'd had for a while. I'd been pitching and submitting forever. And I was like, and it's not like I could quit my job. It's not like that was rent or anything, but it was like a little hint like, hey, you are funny. And like, you're doing the thing. It's sort of, I think the universe like whispers at you and eventually it like yells.
Yeah.
But you have to just like quiet all the other stuff to hear like, no, that's your purpose.
Yeah.
Stop. It's going to suck for a couple years while you're figuring it out, but get out of there, Zach. Jump.
Was there something you had in mind when you said like, I want to make this jump? Or were you like, I don't know what I'm going to. I just know I want it to be creative.
Ooh, great question. I mean, stand-up was definitely like exciting and interesting to me because I was starting to process my life. Like, I've never been quite drawn to fiction that much, except maybe more recently. But I knew I wanted to like process my story, my parents and sort of growing up and not figuring out who I was till college. That felt like something I liked talking about in stand-up and that resonated with audiences. And so that helped me figure out who I am, I guess.
I'm really curious, like, what your background actually is and what that kind of story looks like, because it sounds a little similar to my life. And I'm like, I need to know all about it so I can just, like, dump all my trauma on you.
Trauma dump.
Please take me through that. I would really, really love to hear kind of that story.
Well, come with me, Elise, to yes. Southern Virginia, a beautiful town called Roanoke, surrounded by beautiful mountains, which made it hard to get out of.
Oh, God.
And there, Patty and Frank fell in love, a server and a pastor, and gave birth to four kids who they told about eternity. They told about salvation. They told about the one true Savior, Jesus Christ. And little Zach prayed. Little Zach prayed his little heart out to Jesus Christ to save him. But Jesus Christ didn't say anything back. And so little Zach thought he was going to hell for a very long time. And then got to college and realized there is no hell. life is actually hell. But that's the bedrock of it all. These like very well-meaning, zealous evangelical couple who made a little cult out of their family. And we still stay in touch now. I feel like that's the challenge of my life, is sort of learning to navigate our relationship with one another as like adults, and me starting to see them as like broken, fallible people who are just doing the best that they could. But that's sort of the growing up, the foundation.
Yeah. What was that like? Because I'm assuming that when you were writing your book, you had to process a lot about your life and your upbringing and all of it, you know? Like, what was that journey like for you? And do you feel like it was helpful in that, like, healing and processing journey?
I think healing's a great word. There's at least one essay in the book where I'm like, oh, I got some demons out of me onto the page. Mm. Like, I captured something I went through, and now it's like preserved. There's a lot. I feel lucky to get to process my life in this way. That's what artists do, I guess. And it's what's so sad if I think about people being cut off from art or not expressing themselves at all. I just sent my dad a Bob Ross painting kit, and he's taken to it. Like, this is a 65-year-old man who's never done a creative thing in his life. Used to be a pastor, so he's like a performer by nature, and he's a goofball. But now he's like tearing up the canvas with these like pretty damn good like landscapes, and he loves it. And he's learning, I think, about himself and his own relationship to creativity.
Wow!
And so, I wish everyone could be more creative all the damn time and go make bad art and good art. And Yeah, don't be afraid to like process your life for other people, because we're all going through this like chaotic, painful, joyful thing.
Okay, time for another quick break. When we come back, Zach and I talk about our experiences with religion.
Welcome to The Dough, where cash is queen and we hardly know her, but we're still here figuring her out together because, y'all, season two is here. Hosted every week by me, X-Maya. Remember me? I'm going to be talking to all types of people about their relationship to money. I'm talking to reality stars, entrepreneurs, financial experts, and even some of my own friends. Basically, anyone who will get real with me about their dollars, how they make money, how they spend it, and how they save it, because I'm trying to retire early, people. Season two of The Dough is out now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm June Diane Raphael.
And I'm Jessica St. Clair.
And each week, we are sitting down to talk all about life's twists, turns, and absurdities on The Deep Dive.
From exploring the depths of TikTok, which is our only news source, to navigating the complexities of grief and loss, we are just two best friends behind a mic processing life together.
This podcast is all about finding the silver linings in the madness. So get ready for unfiltered conversations about motherhood, careers, pop culture, and everything in between.
Here at The Deep Dive, we're all about community. We believe in the power of sharing experiences and the strength that comes from supporting one another. And we would love to have you with us.
So be sure to join us every Wednesday on The Deep Dive from Lemonada Media, wherever you get your podcasts.
You had a religious upbringing or?
Yeah, I grew up in California. And so I moved to the Midwest and the religious part of my life happened later. So I didn't really grow up religious, but ended up accidentally going to a ministry school thinking it was a music school in Australia. And I went for a guy. And I really, really wanted this dude to like love me, and he didn't. he thought I was fine, and I was like, you know what? We'll put him over the edge if I go to the same school he went to. And it turned out to be this ministry school, and I ended up being there for 3 years because I was so hell bent on like not admitting I made a mistake, and ended up, you know, it's very confusing and it's very like attractive sometimes, like religion and church, and you make this community. And I felt like I, for the first time, was like accepted. And it was like this, I really didn't know kind of what was wrong and right. And it just felt sometimes really good. And I was like, okay, this is good and right. And then I ended up, you know, staying for 3 years and feeling like, well, if I don't use this, then I kind of wasted that 3 years. So then I moved back to the States and I tried to get a job in a church. And turns out that's a wild concept in the States, like for a woman to lead other men. That's like a no-no, a huge no-no. It's like, no, you can't do that. And so that was really hard. And then that started a lot of questions of like, I know I'm really good at things that I do, and I don't understand why anyone would want me to not do that job because of who I am. And it started a big conversation that I ended up leaving the church. My husband was a pastor and left the church. And we have just been on this huge journey of like, what is real and what isn't? And like, what did I do because I just wanted to be loved and accepted? And what did I do because I really believed it? And those are very hard lines to find. And like, so it's been a big journey. And so I honestly, all that to say, like, listening to your story is I relate so deeply. And I think that with your book, you have processed and moved so much further than to the point where I am not at that point yet, where you feel comfortable and you are like confident in what you believe and you can talk about it. And I'm just like sitting here reading your story and like hearing you, I'm like, I'm jealous. I felt this like overwhelming sense of like jealousy that like you are sure of yourself. And that is a very, very powerful thing. And it's powerful for other people to experience of you, because people need to be around more people that are sure of themselves and sure of what they believe and have gone through the work of processing what they believe and really have like confidence in where they stand with it. And I am just proud of you and jealous, and I want to know how did you get there? How did you get to that point of being confident in what you believe?
This is hilarious to hear as someone just plagued with self-doubt every step of the way. Like,
really? I guess that's the nature of it.
Maybe it's just since I did a little tour from the book just coming out. And so I've been like flooded with adrenaline and like had to perform every night. And I think live performance like puts you in the moment and demands you sort of be confident. I even had someone give a talk back with me and they're like, "You're so confident on stage, but like the voice in the book is like shy and unsure of itself, not just like the character." And so I do think a gift I'll give you that was given to me is that writing is thinking. Like, it doesn't have to be like you can process this all through writing and get to that like place. Your story, I love the idea that you just thought it was a music school and you're hearing like, "Oh, these songs sound great." And then you get there and you're like, "Oh, we're singing to somebody. We're singing."
Zach, the denial that I went through when I flew across the world, there's so much of that season that was so precious to me that I would never redo. There's also so much that I would redo in a heartbeat. And I know everyone's like, "Don't live with regret." And I'm just like, I have so many regrets. I can't even tell you how many regrets I have. But I met my husband there, and that it's like I couldn't imagine, you know, my life without him, and I'm so grateful. It's a whole book in itself, that story. But bringing it back to you, I'm really curious. Like, for me, it's hard to share my story knowing that there are so many people in my life that love me that are very still in it. And I'm curious how you feel sharing your story with religion and all of that you've gone through with people that probably are still in it, like actively right now.
I definitely never want to cause them harm. But I do sort of own like my story and my need to tell it. And I try to tell them like, "Hey, you are a person, but you're also a character in my life." So it's like on the page, it's Zach's experience of mom. And I told her that as like, I sent her a copy, definitely let her like read it. She said she skimmed it. In hindsight, I could have redacted like the threesome chapter or the like sauna hookup chapter. Like, so maybe I demand too much acceptance from her sometimes.
That's fair.
But I think what's lucky about, I'd written a couple pieces before that she was in, and we actually got closer through the writing process. Like, I wanted to write a piece that was called "I Love My Homophobic Mom," the way like people at pride parades have like "I love my gay kid" signs. And she's like, "I'm not homophobic." And so I like got out a dictionary. We read the definition. We had like this debate. And I realized like, oh, that word for whatever is hurting her, even though some of her beliefs are like textbook homophobia. And so as an act of love, I don't have to have that as the headline. It's also, I took David Sedaris's masterclass, and he says like, you can never like predict what's going to bother someone. And so he does like share his pieces with family members to sort of get their response. And like, if it's, he listens to what they say. So like, oh, maybe me using this adjective, like rubbed someone the wrong way, or they got really sensitive about XYZ. So I think sharing a draft or giving people like a heads up that they're going to be in a story. My ex, the one I was with for 3 years and who left me, or we broke up literally on the plane back from Paris. He
in person, you guys were like in together. And
yeah,
you broke up on a plane, like a 11 hour plane ride.
Yeah, and it was like an hour in.
I think I would die, or at least spend the remaining of the flight in the bathroom. I don't think there's a world in which I would be able to like sit in that seat.
I'd found out he had cheated on the trip. Because he deleted a text message and he said it was a pizza coupon. And I knew that the pizza coupons came out on Fridays and it was only Wednesday. So I was like, "Who are you actually texting?"
The way that you like caught him because of a pizza coupon and you know the schedule of when the pizza coupon comes out is the coolest and craziest thing I've ever heard. Like, you were just like,
Mm-mm.
That's not the truth. Mm-mm. I know when my pizza coupons come out, sir.
Exactly. We're kids. We're kids of the clearance rack. We know.
Oh, my God.
We loved our coupons. So I caught him, but then we stayed together, but then we broke up on the plane ride back. But all of which is to say that essay in the book, he and I have stayed in touch. I offered to change his name, and he's like, "No, keep it in." And then one of my I think more people heard about the book from this. He like posted literally yesterday. He's like, it's not every day your ex publishes a unflattering story about you. Congrats on your book, Zach. And he tagged me in it and I put it on Twitter and like the internet is like, ooh, mess. We love this mess.
I love that. And also the fact that he was like, no, don't change my name is pretty wild. He's just like, I'm comfortable with this.
I feel like I was a child. I feel like he was a child. But I have nothing but good feelings for him. I'm too empathetic to people, even if they've like wronged me sometimes. But I think that's all you can give him is love. And I wish him wish him the best. Anne Lamott, who wrote Bird by Bird, says something like, you own your stories, tell them. If people wanted to be righted more warmly about, they should have behaved better. So that's sort of permission to grind the axe.
I can't even tell you how much I relate to this right now. There's just so many stories I tell that end up getting put through the ringer by strangers because it's like, you know, your story has consequences. And I'm like, you're talking to me about consequences? I'm telling you the story about somebody's horrible actions on my life and the consequences that gave me. Like, I am living in those consequences. You want to talk to me about consequences? Like, I don't share these things because it's, I just want to like talk about things that have been horrible in my life. Like, a lot of the things I share are within a message of something so much greater that is like, I accepted this kind of love for so long and I deserved so much more than that. And now I can see that because of all of the 10 years that I chased somebody all the way to Australia that literally didn't even text me back for 9 months once he found out I was there. Like, things like that. Mm. Like, it's you share these things because they are your story and they do make you who you are. And also, totally unrelated with this Twitter drama, I want to know if you like drama.
Do I like drama?
Yeah, that's exactly where my brain went. And there was no transition into that question. I just wanted to know.
I mean, aren't we all messy bitches who live for drama at the end of the day? Sort of. No, I genuinely like everyone to get along. That's what's so ironic. Like, I feel like a peacemaker, even with, like, friends who don't like each other. I'm like, let's all get, can't you all, it's my birthday, can't we all? Like, I genuinely want there to be, like, yeah. But at the same time, like, I guess it was a little saucy of me to, like, bear our dirty laundry. But to your point, it's within the service of some bigger insight. Like, we've been through some shit. We've suffered. Because you suffer, you sort of get a glimpse of the meaning of life or the meaning of things. And then you hopefully find that little insight and bring it back to people. And also, as comedians, we don't, people don't want to hear about us winning. They want to hear us suffering. Like, it's funny, in DC, I ended the show and the books didn't show up. There were no books to sell after the book show. And I'm like, this sucks. But also, how funny. Like, the one reason I've gone to this city. Yeah. Like, it's so, if you can laugh at your own suffering, like, that, those are the keys to the kingdom. Like, you get life then. If something awful happens and you can instantly, like, laugh about it, process it, sure. But if you're like, okay, next thing, universe, what else you got for me?
Is that why you explain your comedy as like funny, but also like a little tragic? Like, what are the two words that you use to hold your comedy in tension with each other?
Oh, delight and devastation.
Yes. Is that your favorite part about like storytelling? Is that you can include both of those and kind of pull at them at the same time?
I think so. You put people's guards down, like, hey, we're going to have some fun, but there's a darkness to life. And then you go back to the fun, but the darkness is here. Hello, we're all having a good time. And
that's real life.
A visual I have, I don't know if it's helpful to anyone or if it makes any sense, but I just see this like white page of light. And then in the middle of it, there's just this dark black gash. Hmm. And the black, like, makes the light lighter. It has to be there. It can't just be pure joy all the time. Life can't be just like this beautiful white light. There has to be acknowledgement of like the dark, twisted side of things.
Do you think comedy helps you kind of see those better and kind of be okay with those? Is comedy kind of your way of processing it? Because for me it is. I'm like, if I can make it funny, I've healed. If I can't make it funny yet, then I'm not past it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. If you can laugh about the thing, now you understand its role. You understand your own insignificance. You understand something better about the world. Then you're ready to like talk about it.
That's like the point of this podcast, the funny because it's true. It's literally just like, I don't know. Sometimes it's really not funny. It's just funny because it actually happened. That's really all I can get to at that point.
And we're the truth tellers, the artists.
Yeah.
We have to like say the big truths. And we get to. Like most people have to live their lives like not telling their boss, you're a bad boss. But I get to write an essay in a book where I'm like, you're a bad boss. I changed her name. But she was so bad at her job.
So bad. She was the worst. I don't even know her. And I just know she's the worst.
You know her. That's the thing. We all know her.
Everyone's
it's universal. It's specific.
Do you feel like you're in charge of your career as a comedian? And do you feel like you're at the front and like driving the car? Or do you feel like it's still happening to you and you're kind of just reacting?
I'm like in the back. I'm like halfway into the driver's seat. I'm
like
climbing.
When you're on a road trip, you're like climbing
down.
Through. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very dangerous. It's precarious. I should be in a seatbelt, but I'm like starting to realize like, oh, wait, I am yeah. driving. And I think I was thinking about this like in my pre-podcast shower. And I realized for so long, I was doing other people's assignments through school. I loved my straight A's. I loved my quizzes. I did everything the teacher needed me to do. Got into the good school, got the good grades there, like pleased the teacher. And what happens when you shift to that artist life is like, there's no one giving you assignments and telling you what is right and wrong, what is success, what's not success, what should you focus on. You have to start to get in touch with like that little desire inside, that little gut check that tells you like, no, I shouldn't have done that. Or like, no, I wanted to say yes to this project, but not to that project. And so there's a tension. The other book you should read is The Artist's Way. If you haven't done it, you probably already did it, though.
Yeah.
Like, it makes you start to realize this tension between power and surrender. Mm-hmm. Like, you have power to control certain things. I am controlling the words that I say right now, but you have to surrender to how people will perceive those words, like what is in store for you. And there's fear in that, but there's also beauty. Yeah. If you knew everything that was going to happen for the rest of your entire life, you'd be a very bored god.
Yeah.
Like, there's some excitement to not knowing. Plus, like, the technologies are changing so rapidly. In 5 years, there might be a new way to make people laugh or a new way to, like, mine insight for life. And so you can't be too attached to, like, very specific goals or what you want a career to look like, especially being alive now. There might be a crisis you need to answer.
Yeah.
That we may need to all rally, but get in the bunker, everybody. Now, Elise is going to make us laugh in the bunker.
And I will not take any more time, I swear, I just wanted with this end with this, but like when I was in web development, it was so clear. I was running my business. I was the only person, it was just me, and I was working with other companies and making websites, right? Like, I was very good at my job, and I felt good at my job. And it's like the only time in my life where I was like, I feel like I'm killing it. Like, I feel like I actually know what I'm doing and I'm good at it and I want to do this forever. And then I transitioned to comedy because it went well and it made more sense to do that than it did to stay in here, and it let me be with my family more and all of that. And it was like, I went from knowing exactly what I was doing and being in the driver's seat to like not even being in the car and like feeling like I was like chasing the car, like, and I was behind it. And like, that's on me because I didn't know. And I was asking everybody else's opinion and asking everybody else to bring opportunity to me so I could then respond to it. And it's felt like this specific year, like I have felt so challenged to get in the driver's seat, like get in the fucking car and sit in the driver's seat and be like, this is what I want this career to look like, because it is such a beautiful and like huge gift to be able to literally make people laugh for my job. And if I don't enjoy every single second of it, what is the point? Like, why am I doing this? And so I just wanted to ask you, like, if you feel like you're in the driver's seat, because I'm just in this like slow awakening of like, how do I get into the driver's seat and how do I make decisions for myself and feel confident in them and know that like, if anyone has an issue with it on my team or any of my team listening, I'm not talking to you. I'm just like talking metaphorically to myself. Like, I love all of you. Like, it's just, I want at the end of the day to be like, I led this thing. And so it sounds like we're both on that journey of doing that together. It's like, it's hard as a comedian or just in general, like owning your own business. It's hard, but I'm curious in the comedy world.
Oh, 100%. To push our metaphor even further, you realize when you're driving a car, you can sometimes look at other people's cars and see where they're going. And
yeah,
there'll be like a little bit of like jealousy or these like socially constructed ideas of what it should look like, where you should be driving to. But like, you might want to go to Orlando and other people, your team wants you to go to Mars.
Totally.
Or like your audience wants you to go to the moon. That balance, taking care of yourself through it all. Wait, there was something else with our beautiful metaphor of this high-speed railway of us all driving, self-driving cars. We're like trying to jump in the driver's seat and make sense of it all. That's such a rich image. Hopefully nobody crashes. Hopefully there's no crashing.
You know, that's me just trying to avoid crashing and burning every single day. It sounds funny, but I really do say, like, I want to be doing this for the next 40 years. I want to be on my literal deathbed, like, still being like, I'm never going to do stand up. And then like someone giving me a mic at like 80, right? And I want to be doing it for the long haul. And it means like, I have got to pace myself and I have got to figure out how to say yes to the right things and no to the right things. And not feel like I have to explain myself every single time someone's like, why don't you want to do this? It's like, because I really want to be home for dinner tonight, guys. Like, because I want to be doing this and I want to give you a job in 20 years. And I want to also have like 30 more people on this team that are like loving their life and love the company they work for, which is my company. And like in comedy specifically, I'm like, why the fuck would we not have the best time? Like, and also like enjoy every decision that we say yes to and not feel bad about the ones we say no to. And I could do this for the whole day. So I won't, because I know you have a day.
You sound like you'd be a joy to work with. And
oh,
I think
God,
you're killing it. You're killing it more than you might realize.
Thank
and
you.
I think learning to be that business owner is like, yeah, it's the next phase of things.
Totally.
For you. It's exciting and scary, but I can't imagine you're not going to meet it with grace and wit and joy. And as Frank Sinatra says, you're going to do it your way. Like, that's everybody else is driving your car's going into outer space. You're going to do this your way.
We're just going right into outer space. Well, I can't think of anything better to end that on, because just a Frank Sinatra quote, of course, obviously. Zach, it was so, so good to meet you. Thank you seriously so much for being on this podcast. And I love that we know each other. I want to connect all of the time outside of this so much.
Please. And keep up the great work. Keep writing. You're doing great.
Thank you so much, Zach. Oh, my God. All right, that's it for my conversation with Zach Zimmerman. Please go and pick up a copy of their book titled Is It Hot in Here or Am I Suffering for All Eternity for the Sins I Committed on Earth, wherever you get your books. And if you like this show, make sure to go and give us a rating and a review. It helps other people find us. All right, thank you so much. We'll be back next week. Bye. There's more Funny 'Cause It's True with Lemonada Premium. Get access to all of Lemonada's premium content, including a very special episode this week where I ask my 5 questions to my husband, Jonas Myers. That comes out this Friday. Subscribe now in Apple Podcasts. Funny 'Cause It's True is a Lemonada Media and Powder Keg production. The show is produced by Claire Jones, Zoe Dennis, and Linnea Tony. Our associate producer is Tiffany Bowie. Rachel Neal is our senior director of new content, and our VP of weekly production is Steve Nelson. Executive producers are Stephanie Whittles-Wax, Jessica Cordova-Kramer, Paul Feig, Laura Fisher, Kesla Childers, and me, Elise Myers. This show is mixed by Johnny Vince Evans, additional help from Noah Smith and Ivan Kraev. Our theme song music was written by me and scored by Xander Singh. Follow Funny 'Cause It's True wherever you get your podcasts, or listen ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership.
Do you ever get hit with a cringy memory of your 13-year-old self out of nowhere, and suddenly you're panic sweating and laughing at the same time? Don't worry. We all get that. It's because being an adolescent is one of the most visceral shared experiences we have as people. And we want to talk about it. Join me, Penn Badgley, and my 2 friends, Nava and Sophie, on Podcrushed as we interview celebrity guests about the joys and horrors of being a teenager and how those moments made them who they are today. New episodes of Podcrushed are out on April 24th, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Paul F. Tompkins.
I'm Lauren Lapkus.
And I'm Scott Aukerman. And together we make up the show
Freedom!
We're comedians from Los Angeles who are also friends.
Yeah, that's weird, isn't it? And on our podcast, we just chat with each other, have fun, play games. It's just a good hang.
We just talk about everything that's happened in our lives ever before and up to now and what will happen next.
We see the future.
So the new season's out now. You can get it wherever you get your podcasts.
Wherever you get them.
Wherever.
Listen. Wherever. Bye.